Blessings to you. This is Gene Sensitig with some thoughts to inspire you today. In Acts chapter 3, we find Paul preaching in a synagogue, and as he was leading up to the account of Jesus being sent to be our Savior, he gave a well-known commentary on David, which was the father of in the line of Jesus. In verse 22 of Acts 13, it says, "And when he had removed him, that is King Saul, he raised up unto them David to be their king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after mine own heart, which shall fulfill all my law will. And then verse 23, of this man's seed hath God, according to his promise, raised unto Israel a Savior, Jesus. So we see that David, being a man after God's own heart, received a promise, and through him actually came the Savior of the world through his family line. Are you a man after God's own heart? What might God have in store for your descendants to do if, because you are a man of God's after God's own heart? Well, what does it mean to be a man after God's own heart? Well, let's analyze this phrase some. Let's look at some of the words. First of all, the word after. After God's own heart. Well, the after in this sense is used with the idea of patterned after. That's something we're familiar with. We pattern after somebody we admire. We pattern after an object when we want to make another object. And it also has with it the idea of an intensity, patterned after with an intensity. Now, what is the heart of God? Well, in this sense, it's used for the mind of God. So, how intensely are we patterning ourselves after the mind of God? It has been said, if we love and admire someone, then we want to be like them. So do you love and admire God? Then you want to be like him. When David was anointed king, this was apparently while he was still a teen, it says there that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him from that day forward. In 1 Samuel 17, we have an account of David sent on an errand. David's father is sent him with some provisions and also to find out how his brothers were faring. They were in the army of Israel, and the army of Israel was fighting against the Philistines. So he went to see, brought these provisions and went to see how they were doing. When he got there, when he arrived, the battle was in array. It says the army of Israel was against the army of the Philistines. But something was wrong in this situation. The Philistines had a champion, Goliath, who came out to defy Israel and the God of Israel. And it says that when all the men of Israel saw him, they were afraid and they fled. Now, to understand, to fully get the impact of this situation, we need to understand how this battle was set up. According to ancient tradition, the outcome of a battle was determined by the gods. The gods of each army had their gods, and the gods determined who was going to win the battle. So what they would do is they would choose one person from each side to be a representative of that god. And then those two people would fight to the death of one of them. And that would determine the battle, that would determine the outcome for the whole army. And so instead of the whole army fighting against the whole army, one man fought against one man. Well, the Philistines had their champion, Goliath. He was all picked out, ready to fight, to represent their gods. And notice, he's defying the God of Israel because this is a battle between gods, supposedly. But what about Israel? Who was their champion? Well, it doesn't seem like there was one there. It seems like there was nobody in Israel's army who believed in God enough to stand up and fight for him. Wasn't that sad? Well, David thought so too. This distressed David, and he started asking the men around him, what would happen to the man? What would the king do for the man who kills this Goliath? And they told him, they said, the king Saul has promised that whoever kills Goliath will have his daughter Michal for a wife. Well, Eliab, that is David's oldest brother, overheard him talking, and he became angry, it says. Probably there was some guilt involved in that, because he wasn't standing up for the right. But anyway, he scolded David, and in that scolding, he implied that David was shirking his responsibilities at home and just simply being nosy. That's why he's there. David gave this answer, which is well known: is there not a cause in your life? Do not be intimidated when others misinterpret your motives. There is a cause. Psalm 23 is one of the best-known psalms. We see this being a testimony from the heart of a man after God's own heart. I'm just going to pick out verse 3 and highlight that. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. May that be your testimony. May that be my testimony. Later, in 1 Samuel 26, we find that while David was fleeing for his life from King Saul, he had the opportunity to kill Saul one night while Saul was sleeping. The man after God's own heart did not kill the king. Instead, he made this declaration: the Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. We see the man after God's own heart has respect for those that God has put in authority. After David was king, he had the Ark of God brought to the city of David. He also desired to build a house for the Ark of God, which was still at this point housed in a tent. And when he told the prophet Nathan about it, Nathan said, good idea, go ahead. But then God came to Nathan that night and said, go back to David and tell him this is not my will. We see that even though the man after God's own heart had respect for sacred things, God still had some limits on what he wanted him to do. The prophet Nathan came back and told David that God doesn't want you to build this house because you've been a man of war, you've shed a lot of blood, and instead, your son, who will be king after you, he will be the one who builds this house. What do we see the man after God's own heart doing? Is he complaining? Is he fretting because he can't go ahead with his great plan? No, we don't find him doing that. Instead, we have him humbly blessing God. And then he set to work and stockpiled materials so that his son could use them when it is time to build the house. Does the man after God's own heart ever stumble, ever fall? David committed adultery with Bathsheba. This was a time when Joab and the army of Israel were out fighting against the children of Ammon. But it specifically states that David stayed at home in Jerusalem. Was David getting a little soft? Was he letting down his guards because things were going well? The man after God's own heart may never let down his guards, no matter how well things are going. That is exactly what Satan is watching for. And at that point, he's going to come in there just right when we're not ready, and attack. Psalm 51 was written after David repented of his sin. I'm going to read numerous phrases out of this psalm. Note with me the attitude of a man after God's own heart, recognizing that he has sinned. Verse 1 says, have mercy upon me, O God. Verse 2, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity. Verse 4, against thee only have I sinned. Verse 7, wash me and I shall be whiter than snow. Verse 10, create in me a clean heart. Verse 12, restore unto me the joy of salvation. Verse 17, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart, O God, thou wilt not despise. Will you with me declare that you will be a man after God's own heart? Go ahead and say it out loud. There's power in a spoken declaration. You ready? I will be a man after God's own heart.